sea lamprey are pretty creepy looking. Their blood-sucking mouths filled with razor-sharp teeth seem right out of a horror movie. And in fact, the Great Lakes Invader actually has its own B-horror movie called Blood Lake.
Oh my God.
These lampreys are hungry and they're dangerous.
You get this stuff in 2 days.
These lampreys are stronger and more aggressive than any other I've ever seen.
While the real-life sea lamprey don't pose a risk to humans, they're a major threat to Great Lakes fish populations. Now, researchers at Michigan State are looking into a unique new way to help control their population. Current State's April Van Buren is here to tell us more. So, April, what do you need to kill one of these things? Garlic or a wooden stake or
actually,
what?
Mark, if you want to find the key to eradicating sea lamprey from the Great Lakes, you'd be better off watching romances than the horror flicks. You see, sea lampreys are pretty tough creatures. They've been around already for 340 million years, and they've managed to survive several mass extinctions. But like many of us, they have a soft spot for love, or in their case, at least for sex pheromones. And that's a weakness scientists at Michigan State are trying to exploit. To learn more, I talked to Michael Wagner. He's an associate professor in the Department of Fisheries and Wildlife at MSU. And before we got to the lamprey love, Michael described for me how lampreys take down their prey.
They start their life out as these cute little larvae buried in sediment, right? They're blind, they eat organic matter and algae, they live a pretty pastoral existence, right? Then after about 4 years, they undergo this metamorphosis, right? So they get eyes, they develop this large suctorial disc mouth and these really horny-like teeth, and they swim out into the lakes and they suck onto the sides of fishes, and their tongue is like a file, and it drills a hole right into the side of the body of the fish, and it lives off of blood and a little bit of tissue. And the wound can be pretty nasty, especially for things like lake trout and salmon, and they can get secondary infections on the wound, which can sometimes be what ultimately kills the fish.
And how big of an impact have sea lamprey had on fish populations in the Great Lakes?
Well, huge, especially in the early to mid part of the 20th century. So once their populations got quite large, they reduced, for example, the fishery of lake trout, which was sustaining a major economic force. That population dropped down to about 2% of what is historically. In the same time, the sea lamprey population was skyrocketing. There were three fishes that were native to the Great Lakes, like certain species of ciscos and so forth, whitefish, that were extirpated. They were gone from the system, also ostensibly due to this explosion in the population. And that's ultimately what led Canada and the United States to form an international commission, the Great Lakes Fishery Commission, part of whom's mission is to control sea lamprey.
And can you talk about the efforts to control sea lamprey so far? Because there has been a significant reduction since people started trying to get rid of them.
There has. In the 1950s, they undertook a major effort to identify a chemical pesticide that would minimize harm to other organisms in streams while killing sea lamprey, and then initiated a program of applying this pesticide in rivers to kill the larvae before they metamorphose into this parasitic phase. And overall, it's been successful in the sense that it's reduced the population down to about 10% of what it was at its peak, and that program continues today.
Do sea lamprey still have, even just that 10% that's left, do they still have a significant impact on the lakes?
They do, and particularly these large-bodied fishes that they principally attack. In part, it's made it difficult to restore these populations and maintain them, given all the other changes that are going on in the lake system and all the other pressures that are placed on these organisms, you know, in a changing ecosystem.
And so right now, sort of the reigning treatment is a larvicide put into streams and rivers, but what I wanted to talk to you about is that there's new research into something called a biopesticide as a way to lure lamprey into traps. Can you talk a little bit about what a biopesticide is?
Sure. I mean, the boring answer is a biopesticide is a designation the federal government gives to any substance you place in the water in the attempt to control a fish. What they're referring to here are chemicals that the animal naturally produces to communicate. This is an interesting animal, right? It sort of does everything in its life it does at night. It's nocturnal throughout. So it can't rely on vision, like you and I can, to find its way around and navigate during migration or select habitats or avoid predators. So it uses these odors. But the interesting thing is that if you start to make all of your decisions based on one type of sensory information, and we're sure that they use other types of sensory information, but we think this is the dominant one, then they're more vulnerable to manipulation, right? So if we can identify the chemical structure of these compounds, then where and when we place these compounds into the water might allow us to guide the animal's movements during the migration. So right now, lamprey are like salmon in that they return to a stream, spawn one time, and die, right? But unlike salmon in that they don't go back to the stream that they came from. That's called homing. And if you do that, there's no talking to you, right? It can't convince you to go anywhere else. You're sort of pre-programmed to go back to that river, and all you can do is make a mistake. But lamprey are more like us, right? As they're migrating at night, they're looking for these odors, particularly this larval odor early in the migration, to tell them that this stream is a good neighborhood to reproduce in. So in the same way that you might pick a neighborhood to live in based on good schools, low crime rate, no drug problem, lamprey's doing the same thing. Larvae are thriving here. If I deposit my larvae there, they'll do well as well. And so this odor of the larvae can be used potentially to guide them into streams. And then we have this alarm cue that might help us keep them away from areas that we don't want them in, right? And ultimately this mating pheromone, which comes in at the end of the process, which males release when they're on nests to let females know, hey, I'm over here, I'm ready to mate. So you have these attractants and these repellents. And if you use them to push and pull the lampreys around the landscape, maybe we can aggregate them into fewer streams that they normally would be in, which is kind of a unite and conquer strategy, right? So shooting fish in a barrel is easy. Getting them to swim into a barrel is really hard. But if you understand the information they use to make that decision, maybe instead of in 15 tributaries in the big watershed, we get them into just two, right? Now we can, the Great Lakes Fishery Commission can achieve as much control with less pesticide.
Michael Wagner is an associate professor in the Department of Fisheries and Wildlife here at MSU. We're talking about the use of pheromones to control the invasive sea lamprey population in the Great Lakes. So I'm wondering if you could kind of walk me through. So I'm a female sea lamprey. I'm swimming through a stream. I'm getting ready to mate. And I get a scent of this male lamprey hormone. What does that trigger me to do?
Well, first it triggers you to move upstream to find the male. Right? Because ultimately, if you don't find a male, you're not going to reproduce. And this animal doesn't get second chances. She either reproduces this one time at the end of her life, or she dies and that's it. And it's a really powerful mechanism helping them find their way in rivers. One male and one female kilometers apart in a river system can find each other with this odor. And that's because the animal's nose is incredibly sensitive to this. They can smell almost down to like individual molecules. That's also why it's so hard to control them. Right? Because even if you get it down to a really small number, they still find each other. And she can produce 60,000 to 100,000 eggs. So one mating pair in a river can produce a whole lot of larvae.
So I'm wondering, how do scientists get the pheromones? Is this, milk is not the right word, but is this something that you have to go out and get from a male lamprey to get the pheromones or to get the alarm cues from a live lamprey?
Well, we extract the odors from them. So with this male sex pheromone, yes, you have to have the live male. He's got to be sexually mature. He's putting it into the water. So if you hold him in captivity, you can draw it out of the water. And that's very simply the process that Dr. Wei-Ming Li, who's also here at Michigan State, used to discover the chemical structure of this 3-ketopetromyosinol sulfate. And he's working to find out what the other chemical compounds are in that odor as well, because it's a mixture. The alarm cue is principally in the skin of the lamprey, but we found it also in the tissue throughout. And so we can just extract it from dead lampreys. The larval odor is the same as the adults. When they're alive, they produce it. It just passively leaks out of them. So if you hold them in captivity, you can extract it from the water.
The sea lamprey is kind of a unique species in that it's guided, a lot of its decisions are guided by its sense of smell and responding to these pheromones or these other cues. But are there other invasive species where scientists are looking into the same sorts of solutions, or is this really something that's specific to the sea lamprey because of its dependence on those kinds of pheromones?
Well, the sea lamprey might be the one that's most vulnerable to this kind of thing, but there are groups working with round goby, which are also an invasive species in the Great Lakes and also use pheromones for reproduction. Many fishes do. There are other groups working with brown tree snakes, which are invasive, say, in tropical islands and other places. But in a lot of ways, this program is unique. And one of the ways in which it's unique is that it's principally funded by a federal management agency, not a scientific agency, a management agency that has research to help it do its job better as part of its mission. The reason I say it's unusual is because what we're trying to do is really innovative, right? And innovation is typified by one thing, failure. So this is something that companies like Google and Amazon are really good at, right? But federal agencies struggle with because they have specific missions set in law. And so the fact that you have an organization like the Great Lakes Fishery Commission that's willing to steadfastly pursue innovative approaches to both do what they historically do better, but also to find ways to do it that will maybe ultimately reduce the use of pesticide and allow them to make decisions about where to apply it that's protective of other things in the Great Lakes versus right now it's just driven by how can we get sea lamprey down to this population to create space for these other fishes to recover.
Michael Wagner is an associate professor in the Department of Fisheries and Wildlife at MSU. We've been talking about controlling sea lamprey in the Great Lakes using pheromones. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
For Current State, this is April Van Buren.